We are mostly live and completely local. This is Metro South Podcasting.
Welcome to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us and how it affects us here on the South Shore of Massachusetts. Yeah. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Oh, here he comes. Watch out, this guy's crazy. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Good morning. Good afternoon. Whatever part of day it may be. Good evening. Good night. I'm Ron Van Dam. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. How you doing? Love you. Well, I mean, not in that way. In a friendly manner. Yeah, I don't know what day this is. I don't even know what day this is. It's Monday, August 18th, 2000-whatever. It's a pleasure to be with you on this fine day. What a lovely day it is outside as well. What do you think? You like the day? It's a lovely day, neighbor. I hope everything's going well for you, that you're having a wonderful life so far. Most people say, hey, hope you're having a wonderful day. I say pretty much, I hope you're having a wonderful existence on the planet. Have a wonderful life. I hope everything's fine for you. I hope you're copacetic, connected, centered, all that kind of crap. I am Ron Van Dam. That's part of my name. It's all of my name, as a matter of fact. I have no middle name. I think my parents wanted to make my middle name Sam, which would be Ron Sam Van Dam, which would have been really too much, almost Chinese. So they said, no, Ron, we gave you enough names. We're going to leave you alone for now. So thank you so much. I appreciate that. I do. It's a lovely day here when we're recording this PODcast. Sun is out, beautiful blue skies. Everything's in just great. I can see the clouds ahead, and I can see Pluto and Neptune and all and stuff. I'm wearing my sunblock 2753. I do need to wear a very strong sunblock when I go outside because I am as Caucasian has ever been. When they invented the skin tone Caucasian, which was invented in a lab somewhere in Union, New Jersey, they found that I was a poster child for being Caucasian. I cannot ever be mixed up with any other type of culture. I even have some freckles on me, which were placed strategically on my body in order to make me really, really Caucasian. Which means that I have to wear a sunblock when I turn the light on in my bedroom. It's just really, I don't tan. Tan? What's that? I don't tan. I go immediately from Caucasian to purple, to Barney. I go straight from Caucasian to Barney. I don't even turn red. I don't even get sunburned. I get purple. That's not entirely true. I'm exaggerating. I do get extreme sunburns, and I am able to lie out in the sun. I recently went to a doctor, which I tend to do, and it's not hard to find a doctor. All you need to do is find someone who's from India, and chances are they're a doctor. And I go up to them, and I say, that was really nasty to say. Well, what's nasty to say if an entire culture of people become physicians? What's so nasty about that? That's like, great, that's amazing. It's not an insult at all. Anyway, so I go to this doctor, my Indian doctor. And it's not the woo-woo-woo doctor Indian, it's the other one. And she says, Ron, there's something strange on your head. And I said, what is it? My ears? She says, no. She says, there's a little scabby thing, very, very tiny. She says, it's not even scabby, really. It's just kind of a thing. And it could be skin cancer. And say that again, doctor. I said, it could be skin cancer. Don't even finish that word. So she sets up an appointment with me for a dermatologist, a dermo. And I went to the dermo, and you got to really make an appointment ahead of time. Like, you have to kind of anticipate you're going to have skin cancer someday. As a matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, if you never went to a dermatologist, make an appointment now just in case you ever do, because your appointment is going to be about 6 to 7 years off. It's a very popular profession. If I were like going to college right now, I'd go dermatology. I would say, whoa, man, because everybody's going to get old. And when you get old, people send you a dermatologist. Now, I'm not even that old, but I'm just really fairly Caucasian. I mean, I'm Caucasian with fair skin. It is. So anyway, so I go to this lady, Dr. Chang, I believe her name is. I don't know. I think it was. Something like that. So I go in. She's wearing a white dinner jacket or whatever you call those things, a white lab coat or something. That's what we call the sign of the doctor. It's like an astrological sign. It's the sign of the doctor. If you're wearing a white lab coat, I have to respect you. I have no choice. I just have to respect you. You can do something I can't do. And I think I can't do it. I don't know. Anyway, she looks at the top of my head and she says, what are you talking about? Oh, says, yeah, you got a little thing here. We're gonna have to remove it. I said, what is it? What is it? Is it from an alien being? Was I abducted by an alien being in the middle of the night? I remember the night. It was like 3 weeks ago. I was shit-faced and I went to bed and I thought aliens were attacking me. And she says, no, it's nothing like that. It's probably something that you developed when you were a child. What? When I was a child? Yeah, she said, if you don't take care of yourself when you're a child and you don't put on sunblock, then over the decades, it can develop into whatever this is. Is it cancer, doctor? She says, well, it's kind of, yeah, it is, but it's no big deal. We scrape it off and you go home and you don't have it. It's topical. I said, topical? Talking about the weather is topical. Having something on your head that you got to remove is more than topical. It's discussable. She says, stop it, you big baby, you big, fat, tall, stupid baby, she said. So you're supposed to talk like that to a patient? Is only if they are a big, fat, tall, stupid baby like you. I call her a poo-poo head. Anyway, we have this relationship now. So now I have to go to another guy who happened also to be of the Oriental persuasion. And I say that only because I don't know who they are. I don't know if this guy was going to remove the thing. If he's Chinese, Japanese, Norwegian. I'm very bad at that. I'm very bad at that. I get Norwegians and Japanese messed up all the time. I can't tell the difference. Anyway, he puts like a cloth over my head with a hole in it. It's like we're going to have Jewish sex or something. And he scrapes this thing away and he puts it in a bottle or something and sends it off to Poland Spring. I don't know what he does with it. He says, okay, you're all set, but you got to come back and we got to follow up and make sure nothing comes back. And I said, all right. I said, but do I have skin cancer, doctor? And he says, well, like your other doctor said, I don't know. You know, yes and no. Yes, you do, but don't. It's not a thing. And I said, but I'm so young. I'm so young to have. He says, stop it. He says, it's topical. It was removed. Stop it. Just stop it, you big fat baby. So you're not the first person to call me that. So to this day, this was years ago. Nothing's come back and everything's fine and all that. But I am a big stupid baby because I do, when someone tells me something like that, I go a little nuts. I mean, who wouldn't? Wouldn't you go nuts? Maybe not. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me. That's not a song. I just thought that perhaps it should be. Maybe it's just me. Yeah. Do you take vitamin D? Do you know what that is? It's not vitamin A. It's not vitamin B. It's not vitamin C. It's vitamin D in the chain of command. I take it every day because it's very similar to what we're talking about. Many people have vitamin D deficiency. And you know where you get vitamin D from in a natural way? That's correct, from the vitamin D cow. That's correct. No, you get it from you get it from the sun. The sun provides this vitamin D. And it's crucial in the body for various things. What I know it's crucial to take for is, because I just talked about it, is cancer. All forms and all walks of cancer life. And cancer is just a cell disease, really. That's what really all that means. There's just so many types of it. But vitamin D is supposed to ward it off. It's supposed to make your body defend against the radical cells or the eradical cells. I don't know because I'm not a doctor. So I pop these babies. I take, and just because I'm going to tell you what I take, doesn't mean that you should take this. They come in these little gelatin little things, which are very easy to take. They just slide down your mouth with some water. It's not these big horse pills or anything. And I don't know what horse pills are. Pills that horses take? I don't know. But I take 1,000 milligrams. I take two or three of these a day in one sitting when I wake up in the morning. So I take 3,000 milligrams a day. Because in my mind, see, this is, again, I've talked about this before. In my mind, if you believe that taking these things are going to make your body defensive against diseases, then indeed, in your mind, that will occur. Can you get cancer otherwise? Of course you can. Are the chances of it lower? Maybe, maybe not. Do you think in your metaphysical, day-to-day, brainy life that you're better off? Yes, you do, because you believe it. And that's what's important. If they came out with a report that sucking on the corner of an index card was healthy for you, I would suck on the corner of an index card because that's the way I am. And if I actually believe that, I might be healthier because my brain is believing that. And that's what medicine men, quote unquote, through time have dealt with. They just hand you an elixir that is absolutely worthless. And you believe that it works, then it works. And that's all it is. So life is as simple as that sometimes, I do believe. So anyway, so vitamin D, they found that vitamin D, and it's a good thing to take. You don't take too much, you don't take too little, probably anywhere between 1,000 and 3,000 milligrams of vitamin D is fine. I guess your doctor can test to see if you have a vitamin D deficiency, in which case you might want to take even more, but it is the new thing. It's the new thing that everybody says is really important. About 10 years ago, my Caucasian doctor was telling me, this is how I distinguish them, my Caucasian doctor was telling me that vitamin E was the wonderful miracle thing where your body just is fantastically off by taking vitamin E. And he prescribed me to take vitamin E on a daily basis, and I did it for the same reason. And then about 3 years ago, they come out with a report that the vitamin E, don't take that, stop taking it. And my doctor actually said, stop taking vitamin D. And I said, but you were the person that told me to take vitamin D. I mean, vitamin E. I'm sorry, vitamin E. Let's get our letters straight. You were the person who told me to take vitamin E. And he said, yes, studies, the research say otherwise now. Oh, I see. So you told me to take something, but now the research says otherwise, so you're now telling me to stop it. I said, yeah, that's right. I said, okay, all right, fine. Do you understand, doctor, how there's a little bit of a mistrust issue going on here? Anyway, that's what happens. One of the greatest medical discoveries or revelations of all time, I should say revelation, not a discovery, was this two glass of wine deal, where if you have one or two glasses of wine, depending on if you're male or female, if you're male, you can handle a little bit more alcohol on a daily basis than a female can. Why? I don't know. I have no ovaries. I suppose that has something to do with that. Ovaries cut down on your alcohol intake. I really don't know. That's the only difference I see. I don't have breasts. I do have breasts, only they're not as large as yours, if you're a girl. If you're a guy, sometimes too. Anyway, What's wrong with me? Just answer that question, will you please? What's wrong with me? So anyway, I love that. A glass of wine a day. I love wine. Who doesn't love wine? Get you a little tipsy. It's good for you. It's got something in the red wine, just the red wine, not the white, the red wine, something in it, that some ingredient, some chemical that is actually good for you. Fantastic. Love it. Love it. Love it. Then about a year ago, I'm reading a research paper, and I look for these things. And it says that just having a drink or two a day is better for your body than not, research says. And I'm thinking, okay, now we're actually moving away from the wine, and we're saying that any alcohol on a small daily basis is good for you. I thought that like something went wrong and I misheard something, because that's the news we've all been waiting to hear. And then, of course, you read stories about all these celebrities and television stars and movie stars and people of stature who check themselves into rehab. Why? Because of alcohol dependency. You see, all this stuff has to do not with the alcohol, not with the drugs or anything like that. It is your personality. If you get hooked onto things, if you become dependent on substances, then you should stay away from this stuff. If you don't, then I guess it's okay. Now, I'll talk about myself. I love to drink every once in a while, a little cocktail, whatever the case may be. It's fun, it's social, whatever. I can go 2 or 3 days in a row and have cocktails. And then I can go 3 or 4 days or a whole week and not even think of having a cocktail. So I think I'm okay. But there's other people that once they do something, they just can't stop it. Smoking is a good example and a horrible thing, which, of course, as you know, our government, back around the World War II military days, were handing out cigarettes to the troops and saying, this calms your nerves. Cigarettes are actually good for you. Cigarette companies did the same, and nobody balked on that. People thought, yes, cigarettes really do calm your nerves. They are an excellent thing for you to keep you stress-free. Smoke away, baby. It's like the vitamin E thing. Same deal. So I kind of wonder, like, what I'm being told, if it's true or not or what. But anyway, I thought that would be interesting to talk about today. And, of course, I was a little bit off as far as that's concerned. Am I right, lady?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You're a nut.
No, you are.
I am, too.
Yay.
Yeah. That's the lady. You familiar with the lady?
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Don't worry. No one has to know. This is just between you and me and Ron. We cool?
Oh, we're cool. We're cool, all right. We're cool. Don't worry about it. We're good. So this vitamin D thing, here's a new study. You're going to love this. Here's a new study on vitamin D. It actually, for men, it actually cures erectile dysfunction. Oh, come on, seriously. Yeah, yeah, get it up. Give it up. Give it up. Get it up. It's not that if you take vitamin D, your penis does a salute. It's not like that. It's more that if you have a propensity for penile softness, this doesn't solve the thing, but it kind of leads you on the road toward it. It doesn't replace the Viagra, so I don't know. Why can't somebody invent something called Penis Helper? I mean, maybe I should invent it. We can all do it. I don't know why I talk about my inventions on the air like this, like so people can steal them all the time, and they probably do. I would actually market a product called Penis Helper. And on purpose, I would make it sound like hamburger helper, because in a sense, that is, we are helping your hamburger, so to speak, men. Instead of taking an erectile dysfunction pill, which everybody invents and says this is better than the other, and Cialis, Vialis, Tepezza, Vitagra, whatever these things are called, and then there's things that your blood pressure will go up, you'll die, your heart will stop beating, your kidneys will fall all over the floor, if you have an erection that lasts more than 7 days, you're lucky, go to the doctor immediately. Can you imagine taking a Viagra and then going to, then your stiffness doesn't go away, and it's like the third day, and you walk into the doctor's office, and the nurse says, yes, welcome to urgent care, how can I help you? What are you supposed to say? I have pant load-wise, there's a thing in the front that doesn't seem to, you see, I took this, how do you explain that? First of all, you have to explain that you have this large penis thing going on, and you're not a pervert. And secondly, you have to explain that you had this tremendous problem and that you're not manly enough to get it up on your own. There's just no winning with that problem. So what I thought I'd invent and come up with, it's funny. What I thought I would invent would be penis helper. And it, again, would be directly constructed after the hamburger helper as partially a joke, but everybody would get it. There would be no education to the public. Hamburger helper, penis helper. Okay, I get that. It's simply a cream. It's a rub. You open up a jar, like Noxzema facial cream or something like that. You open up the jar, and it's a clear gel. And you rub it on your penis. Calm down. Take it easy. I'm just describing a product. For some people, they're sitting at home having oral sex now with themselves. I'm just explaining the product. So you'd rub this on your penis, or you would have the woman of your choice. And now it's woman's choice, ladies and gentlemen. They would rub it on your penis. Is this uncomfortable for you, by the way? Is this okay? Come on, it's a POD cast, you know? I'd say the same thing on the air, on the FCC air right now. There's nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with it at all. If the woman rubs this on your penile colony there, that's an arousement to begin with, but then she knows that you need this stuff, that you need the penis helper, so it's, you know, it's not really psychologically a wonderful thing. So you kind of put it on yourself, and there's some kind of tingly thing in it, and they have tingly creams for this, but this actually would have some type of a medicine and chemical in it that would stimulate your blood vessels, but through the outside, through osmosis as opposed to through your blood system. Therefore, it would be a lot safer than taking Viagra and Citalis, Pitalis, and Vitalis, and Fischalis, because you wouldn't internally digest this. It would be external, and it would just be for those blood vessels in that area. And I thought, wow, this is really wonderful. So if you're a chemist or something like that, and you want to hook up with me, contact me through Metro South Podcasting at AOL.com, and we'll have a business. And with all the money that I make from this, with the millions and billions of dollars that I make from it, I will share it with my audience. Yeah, right. That was about the funniest thing I said all day. Okay, I'm going to move on to another subject that's a little more serious. Actually, it's a lot more serious. Over the weekend, another child was struck by a vehicle. And this is becoming an epidemic. And it's not just in the South Shore area. It's all over the United States, I would assume. This is not a town-specific kind of problem. However, it is constant. There was a 17-year-old kid riding his bicycle in the city of Brockton on Forest Avenue on this past Friday night. It's the second time in 2 days that a child was hit by a vehicle in the city. A 17-year-old is indeed a child. This story was reported by the Sunday Enterprise. In all of these circumstances, I don't know what happened. I'm assuming that there was no drunk driver involved, because the driver at this particular incident stopped immediately, shortly after 9 p.m., and was, you know, very concerned and such. Usually, if you're drinking and this happens, you take off. It's the 11th time that a child has been hit by a vehicle in the city of Brockton alone since April 2nd, which is a period of about 4.5 months. Just last week, a kid was struck and killed by a tractor trailer while he was rollerblading on Battle Street. On June 10th, there was a 3-year-old daughter, Caitlin. They crossed Main Street in Brockton, and a school van hit them. And so on and so on. These are young kids around the age of 7, 3, 10-year-olds. This one was 17 years old yesterday and the day before that. Here's the point here. Obviously, it's twofold. And this is something that can be so easily stopped. It's twofold. One is, of course, when you're driving on a local street, keep your speeds down, but you've got to be so careful. You've got to drive defensively on local streets. You really do, and keep the speed down. I really feel, though, that most of this, and again, I don't know the circumstances case by case. My feeling, my gut feeling, and whenever I express my gut feeling, I get in a lot of trouble. Because families are grieving here, and I'm making these stupid comments. Kids and adults with kids, you have to be so careful. These streets are for moving vehicles that are large death machines, cars and tractor trailers. They travel in the streets. They move. They have inertia. They will kill you. If you're struck by one, they can kill you. You have got to be so aware and conscious of that fact as soon as you go near a street. I'd be freaked out even working on a sidewalk near a curb. It's a horrible problem in the winter because sidewalks are obstructed by snow and ice in the winter. And a lot of people walk in the streets. I've talked about that before. That makes me so nervous. All right. But in the summer months, man, you got no excuse. Stay away from the street. Adults must always be aware. I'm not blaming you. I'm just reiterating. If there's anything you can teach to your child on a daily safety basis, it's keep out of the street. I don't care if there's a car coming or a car not coming. A car can show up in a split second. A child's attention can be diverted in a millisecond. And in that small tick of the clock, one's life can change or perish. When I'm driving on Belmont Street in the city of Brockton, where all this is occurring, as it does in every city and town, obviously. And I see the high school kids crossing the street to get to the school. Their attitude about the traffic is phenomenal. Now, I was a kid, too. I was a kid. I really was. It's hard to believe, and maybe I wasn't. I'm really not sure. But I was a kid, and I remember certain feelings of defiance, like, well, if I run across the street or if I time it properly, this car will not arrive at my face. But for the most part, the majority of the time, I was fearful of those cars, and I never trusted. See, there's something to not trusting people, because it works. I never trusted that a car would necessarily stop for me or even slow down for me. Maybe they're drunk. Maybe they're doing something else. Maybe they're texting. I don't know. But things may not plan out as I have when I'm crossing the street. These kids across the street now on their way to high school or leaving to go home, they don't even run across the street. They saunter like, I dare you to hit me. You'd be in a lot of trouble if you hit me. So they saunter across. They walk slowly like they're the king shits of the world. And I cringe when I see this. And I'm thinking, man, if a car doesn't hit you, you're lucky. You're trusting the fact that because you're walking across the street that all the cars are going to stop for you. It's been nice knowing you, kid. And if you make it through childhood, you've been lucky. Not smart. You've been lucky. These kids have an attitude where I'm invulnerable. You're not. And hopefully someday you won't learn your lesson. I don't know how many of these kids had that attitude. Maybe none. Maybe some. I don't know. They're specific incidents. I'm not commenting on those incidents specifically. But what I am saying is that the burden of proof here is on those children and the parents of those children. Keep your kids out of the street. I know, kids got to ride their bicycles. It's a kid thing, and you're not supposed to ride your bicycle on the sidewalk because you can knock people over. So what's a kid to do? I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I don't know the answer to that. I grew up in a suburb, and there was like a car every 10 minutes. I was lucky. And I would take my bike to a wooded area with paths, and I would ride it there. I didn't do much riding in the streets, but of course, yes, sometimes I took my bike down to the main shopping area, the main strip. And I guess childhood is a lot of luck. It's a lot of, ooh, I made it through childhood. And when you look back and see all the stuff you did, you kind of wonder how you made it through, especially safely with cars and riding your bicycle and your skateboard and whatever other stuff you did, running into the street after a ball before the ball got too far away and not looking really quick to see if there was a car coming. You kind of got to understand that you slipped through okay. And then when you grow up someday and you have children, you go through that all over again, but in a more intense fashion, because it's not you anymore. It's not you in supposed quasi-control of your actions. Now you care and are protective over something that you have literally no control over, your kid. And if your kid runs into the street, or your kid gets hit by something or falls off a bike and really does some incredible injury, you're helpless. It's not you. You say to yourself, I wish that was me. I wish it wasn't my kid. I wish it was me that was going through that pain. Having children is a whole nother level, kids. It's not just popping the thing out. It's not rubbing penis helper on your dick and then having a child and then they go to school and then that's it. It's a whole pant load of problems and concerns. But you have to be able to go through the emotions of being that kid all over again. You live your childhood and the dangers thereof and the dangers of life and the concerns of life through that child that you created. And it's worse than what you go through yourself. Try the first day your kid passes their driver's test and they go off in the car by themselves for the first time, and it's the nighttime. And as a parent, you can't help but wonder, are they coming back? Did something happen on the road? And you look out that window, and you watch that clock every second tick off the clock, wondering, is my kid okay? Did something happen? Was there a drunk driver somewhere? Did my kid maneuver that dangerous intersection that I know is so dangerous and I know my kid was going to go through there and I warned my kid about it? Did they make it through? Was it okay? That's the part that really connects you in a very nervous fashion. So my message to the kids of today, and I know that my audience is not kids. I realize that. I mean, I hope it would be. I mean, I think I'm cool. I think I am. But my message to the kids is, man, you have no idea how lucky you would be to get through childhood unscathed. But my message is more toward the parents who do listen to this show. And they know where I'm coming from. They get it. Keep your kids out of the street. Don't be overprotective about it. Just make sure that those kids understand without question that it takes just one instance of misjudgment and they're maimed for life or dead. I mean, it's just, I know it sounds morose and horrible, but sometimes you have to be morose and horrible in order to achieve. Just like when you're smoking and somebody shows you a picture of a blackened lung with tar all over it and the lung being tattered and basically disintegrating, you look at that and you go, I ain't smoking ever again. I ain't smoking ever again. That looks awful. That's what my lungs look like or are starting to look like or could look like. That affects you. Some people carry a picture of their little kid in their wallet if they smoke. Like, well, if I smoke too much, I'll never see the kid. To me, the blackened lung sounds like a Cajun dish when it's not. The blackened deteriorator lung probably does the trick for most people. But that's what you have to do with the kids, man. You gotta just make the kids understand that the consequences of not being observant are incredible. To me, the most attractive person to me, the most life-efficient person to me is not the attractive one with the perfect chin and the perfect hair and all that. Personality means a lot. Sense of humor means a lot. But to me, what I would call, I guess, street smart in a sense, but in essence, is the ability for a human being to be observant, to know what's going on around them 24/7. They are the people that I admire, the ones that have this ability to live life so full. And living life to the full is not going down mountains on skis and traveling to Uruguay. That's not, to me, that's not experiencing life in full or being in a blimp or skydiving or bungee jumping. That's excitement and adrenaline. That's not life in full. Life in full is the ability to take in everything that goes on around you and soak in all of its grandeur and splendor, but to be aware always of what's going on around you, not just the dangers, but the pleasantries, to be able to walk through a forest and feel the trees around you and feel the breath of life and the creatures of the woodlands, and to hear the leaves and the twigs crackle beneath your feet, to understand the nature and the ecosystem that is existing all around you. That to me is the gift of life, the gift of observance, to be able to soak it all in. There are downfalls to that, but I believe it's worth everyone. And those are the people, by the way, that are excellent mates, excellent people to know, because they're aware of you. Their emotions are heightened all the time, not in a horrible way, but in an observant a manner. They tend to be more creative people, but they are blessed. They are blessed because all of life is around them and they know it. My greatest sadness is for people, and I know many people like this, who go through life with blinders on and they do not appreciate or feel what this glorious life situation really is. The amazement. Sometimes I'll just sit outside and I'll stare at the wispy clouds going by, and it is, to me, that's calming. Other people, they look up, oh, it's a sunny day, bye. No, man, you're not getting it. You're not getting it. There's incredible beauty up there in the sky. It's a phenomenal situation. The dark blue. It's just the way, and I'm not being religious about this. I'm just being, it's reality. It's soaking in reality. All right, I'm sorry, I got a little bit too deep. But every once in a while, I just point these things out. I'm a pointer. I'm a pointer. Yeah. It's what I do. It's about all I do, as a matter of fact, unfortunately. Yeah.
One man, one microphone, 1 hour, so many random thoughts. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show.
It's almost time to go shopping for the kids, not to buy more kids. I'm talking about they're going back to school, and for many parents, that's a blessing because the built-in babysitter is coming back. For the kids, not so much. For the kids, it's like the summer gift is slowly dwindling, and it's back to an entire new season, a new year of schooldom. I despised school. I loved education. I loved learning. I soaked a lot of stuff in, but I despised having to do something, and I still despise that. I don't like being told what to do and when to do it and how to do it. And my contract in going to school every day at 8:15 in the morning and being there until 3:15 in the afternoon was to me like a reporting for prison duty. Of course, it's not horrible. They didn't order torture me or anything like that. But it was the fact that I had to be somewhere for a certain period of time before I could leave. I was prisoner in that building. I couldn't leave if I wanted to. That's why, as much as I love this country, I could never be in the military. I could never be told what to do 24/7 to the point where somebody owned me and my soul. I couldn't do it. I never have. I never will. I'm a free spirit. But I didn't like school for that reason. I didn't mind the people. I didn't mind the social interaction, except for the bullies. They were assholes. Other than that, didn't mind it. Soaked in a lot of information. Some of it I use. Some of it I'll never use. Geometry? Seriously? You're wasting your time? What's the point of that? If I want to learn about that stuff and I go into a profession like that, I'll go to college accordingly. I don't need to know that. I don't need to know everything. That's why they have people. That's why they have people and they have checkbooks. If I don't know something, I write out a check, you do it. You can do it better than I can. That's what we call business. It's what we call the economy. There's nothing wrong with that. Trigonometry, I still don't know what the hell that is. I don't think I've used it. I don't want to use it. If I did use it, I apologize to the person I used it on. Math, simple math, wonderful, fantastic. It just saves me from getting the calculator out, which I could do right now, or getting the calculator app on my smartphone. I could use that. But to have basic knowledge in my head of math, love it, fine. Math didn't teach me numbers. Math taught me logic. Math told me how to figure things out. Algebra, not so much. No. Algebra didn't teach me how to figure things out. No. Math did. General math, that was fine. History, fascinating. Been there, done that. I know history repeats itself. Good, good information. You can teach me that history repeats itself in about 3 minutes, and I'm done. The only reason history is important is so you don't sound stupid about talking about something that already happened. What is the most important thing learned in school? Social interaction. And culture. Culture. Music programs, important. School theater, important. Social interaction, standing up in front of people. Book reports, stupid. Reading, fantastic. Don't ever force somebody to read. Get them into the habit of reading, the enjoyment of reading, the appreciation of reading, but then don't make them read. If they want to do that, they will. And some people thrive on reading. It's some of the smartest people I know because they soak in information. That's great. Can't teach that in school. That's an attitude. Can't teach attitudes necessarily. English, most important subject of all. Most important subject. Everybody needs to know how to speak English, how to write, how to express themselves. It is a requirement. In every corner of life, in everything you do. English, expression, written, verbal, everything. Very important. Foreign language, I don't give a shit. It's them that needs to learn, not me. If I go to another country, I'll learn foreign language then, because that's not foreign anymore. Foreign language, again, it's not the language that you're learning. It's not the ability to coexist with other cultures. I can do that anyway without speaking their language. I can pick up stuff and get Rosetta Stone. I don't need to know that in school. All right, I've had enough of me. I really have. At a point, I realized that I exposed myself too much. This is just a stupid podcast. There's no reason why I should talk about myself. And I would normally say, but I'd love to hear about you, but I really wouldn't. So it doesn't work either. All right, look, you know. There's a wonderful world out there. Whether you experience it or not, at least appreciate it. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I do wish you peace.